The views and opinions expressed by individuals on the following program do not necessarily reflect those of the network, Guys Guy Radio, and its platforms. It's Guys Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manny.
Welcome to Guys Guys Radio. This is your host, Robert Manny, welcoming you to the show where men and women can be at their best and everyone wins, Guys Guys Radio. We're here to inform you, inspire you, empower you, and get you to think, feel, and who knows, maybe even act by virtue of the journeys, stories, experiences, and insights of the guests I bring you each and every week to the show. And once again, this week is no exception. Today, we're going to talk about channeled books with our special guest, Paul Selig. Channeled books, what do you mean by that? Well, can you imagine being able to pull in information from a collective of guides in the ethers and another dimension that come through you and you verbally speak them, speak the words, and they're transposed into copy and they become books without editing? And this has happened with our guest, Paul Selig. I believe it's around 12, 13 books now. And we're going to get into that whole process about channeling, who the guides are, what type of information comes through them, and how we can benefit from all of this. And it's just an amazing story. His life story is amazing. And can you imagine being able to have the ability to channel? You know, I've been through a number of spiritual enfoldment classes, and a lot of the people in the class, they want to be able to channel. But it's usually the people who aren't asking that get the gift. So we're going to get into that today on Guys Guys Radio.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, Guys Guys Radio is the interview portion of our show, and I'm pleased to welcome back a guest. I think he's been on the show maybe more than anybody else, because for every one of his books, he's graced us with his presence, Paul Selig. Let me tell you a little bit about Paul. He's one of the foremost contributors to the field of channel literature after a spiritual experience in 1987 that left him clairvoyant. He attended NYU and earned a master's from Yale, author of 13 books now in the after I Am the Word, the series after that. And he offers channel workshops internationally. He's all over the place. He serves on the faculty of the Esalen Institute, and he has a private practice in Hawaii as an intuitive and conducts frequent live stream seminars. They're terrific. I highly recommend it. Today, we're going to talk about the latest book that just came out. It's called A World Made New, and it's the guy's new book. It's the third manifestation trilogy entry, and it offers a transformational wisdom of what our world could look like, a hopeful glimpse into a potential future. It marks the natural conclusion of Paul's four trilogies to date and can be considered a companion to the bestseller I Am the Word, the first book and the seminal book in the franchise. And it brings together the wisdom of all 12, 13 books now, the guide's current teachings. And I know, Paul, you're already working on another set. So welcome back to Guys Guys Radio from Maui, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So just for context, for those who are not familiar with your work in our audience, who are the guys that work through you? How did they find you? How did you find them? And I'd like to throw in there is, do you have an option, or did you have an option at the time not to work with them?
I have no idea. You know, I don't really know how this happened. It's not anything that I thought was going to happen or that I wanted to happen at all. The guides that I work with, I mean, I had an experience when I was very young, about 5 years old, of some being hovering over the bed talking to me, and I was floating out of my body at the time. I mean, I often link that to this experience with the guides, but really, you know, I came into a spiritual life not because I thought it would be nice to be spiritual or that I felt like being a New Ager or something. It was far from it. I sort of collapsed into it, really, more than anything else. And my psychic abilities developed slowly, really, from about the age of 25 on, from 1987 on, I think. So the guides that I work with, initially, I was hearing nameless voices. I mean, when I talk about clairaudience, it's not like a voice in the room. It's a thought in your mind that is clearly other and blocks out all other thoughts and has truth to it that you really can't deny. But I was volunteering at a center for people that were living with life-challenging illness. It was the height of the AIDS epidemic. And I was doing energy work there because I had studied to get a context for the psychic stuff I was beginning to experience. And I began hearing for them. So I began to hear through the static of my own mind words that I would repeat. What does Carlton mean to you? Well, that's the apartment building that I grew up in. Who's Desiree? Well, that's my mother, you know, and things like that. And as I kept getting confirmation on what was piercing the static of my very busy mind, I began to trust it a bit more. And then I began to develop. So I think of myself as a radio. The guides that come through me, the name that they've given, they say, if you'd like to call us something, you may call us Melchizedek, which is an old name. I like the guides, and they're only called the guides because my ex 20-something years ago used to say, ask the guides this, ask the guides that, and that's how they ended up with the name. They don't seem to object. And I tend not to put the emphasis that some do on the personage attached to a message, because I think anybody can say they're hearing anybody if they want to, and from to my mind, it's the truth and the quality and the energy of the message that's important, more so than the one claiming authorship. But Melchizedek is the name that they've used. How do they choose me? They said, I agreed to this before I came in, and then I've worked with them before. And perhaps that is so. I don't think about it too much. I don't like dwelling on the stuff that's about specialness, because I think that's a trap.
They, from my readings, as they've said, they're kind of a collective, and that they were not human, but they've always been around. Is that accurate? And then does it change the ones who are part of the collective who come through to you?
I don't know. I mean, I know the one that I see on occasion visually, I know what he looks like, and I know what it feels like to be him because he steps in more fully. But they do say it's a collective. They say some of us have been in form and some of us have not. So some of them have probably had a body, not all of them. And I do hear that they've been around for a long time. And Melchizedek, from what I understand, is a priesthood, you know, and their teachers. And the guides say that they're teachers and they're here to teach. And they've been teaching for a long time. And this message has come through throughout time in different cultures and different vocabularies. And this is how it's coming through now.
Now, for writing a book, just for our audience who are not that familiar with you, Paul, how does that take place? It's kind of knock, knock, Paul, here we are, ready for a book. I know through a lot of your live stream events and a lot of in-person events, a lot of the book teachings are coming through.
Well, there isn't any knock, knock. I didn't know that I was going to do the first book until 2 days before it began. And they said, we have a book to write, and if you take 2 weeks, we'll do it. And at that moment in my life, I thought, well, we'll see what happens. You know, I wasn't expecting much. And they delivered the first book in 2.5 weeks because I took 2 days off to go teach. I was teaching college at the time. Now, you know, at this point, I have a contract, I have a publisher, there's an expectation of deadline. But I know in advance when they're going to do something, and they work with my schedule well. So I actually was not expecting, World Made New is the 12th book. The 13th book was just channeled through me,
Okay. Still
being proofread, you know, the process is I sit in a chair, I close my eyes, and the whole thing comes out, and the recordings are transcribed, and the recordings are published. The transcripts are published really without editing. They're proofread, the punctuation is checked, words that I garble might be corrected, but maybe 4 or 5 words in any book at the most. But I, you know, this last summer, I was not expecting to do a book, and I had 4 long events lined up almost back to back. And the day of the very first long event, they began delivering a book. and they finished it, I think, the last day of the final event. And that's how they did it. So over whatever 20-something days max, the last book was delivered. So I was surprised when it came, only because I wasn't anticipating it, and the publisher wasn't, and suddenly there's a whole other book. But this is sort of how it comes. They understand, and all of the books now are done in front of audiences, mostly in person, sometimes some of it's online as well, in a live stream. The first two or three books were done with me on the phone with a woman named Victoria Nelson in Berkeley, California. And I was recording, she was taking notes, and then I would later transcribe the recordings. And I only really knew that it was a book once it was done. Up until then, I was just typing what they said. They said it was a book, but I didn't necessarily believe it until they finished it. And then I looked at it, and it was actually a very coherent manuscript. And that's the surprise with all of these books, truthfully, is that they make sense and they feel as if somebody sat down and wrote them, when in fact they're all spoken. They're all verbal teachings that are then, you know, transcribed.
Okay, my special guest on Guys Guys Radio, Paul Selle. We're talking about the latest book, The World, A World Made New. So there's four sets of three book trilogies, if you will. Do you, looking back, do you categorize them now and say, oh, the first three were about this? Where do you put I Am the Word, which kind of is a standalone? And then how do you look at the other books? Are there series like, okay, these three go together and these three are about this?
Well, yeah, that's how they've done it. They've done it in sets of three. The book that they just dictated is not of three. It's a standalone book. Truthfully, all of the books are standalone books. But there is a theme, I think, that connects the books, and the teachings build one upon the other strangely well and carefully. So I Am the Word, I think, is the primer for all of the books that followed. I think it actually holds the DNA of all of the other teachings, which they unpack carefully and solidly in each subsequent book. And, you know, I Am the Word is basically telling us who we are and what we're capable of. And how this comes to pass seems to be the subsequent books. So the first book, I Am the Word, was the introduction. The Book of Love and Creation was 500 pages of manuscript. It was really two books, I think, in one. But at the time, I don't know if they knew that I was getting on board to do them all, you know, and I kept saying, okay, we'll do another one. Well, that's okay, we'll do another one. And the third book, the Book of Knowing and Worth, was really about our own inability or unwillingness to claim our own true nature, you know, and working through the unworthiness piece or the belief in separation at that level. The second trilogy of books was the Mastery Trilogy. And that was a heady experience, you know, they were really getting into the fundamentals of the esoteric teachings, what it means to be at a level of consciousness where you can no longer claim victimhood, and what it means to align to the energy of truth at the cost of fear or the lies that have been perpetrated. And, you know, I don't remember what the final book of that series was. There's so many of them now. The next trilogy was the Beyond the Known Trilogy, and that was a trip and a half, because that's where they began introducing the upper room, I believe. Yeah, the upper room. So everything up until, I think, the book of, whichever the first book was of that trilogy, was really about bringing us to a place where we could accept what they're about to bring forward. And that's still the case with how they work. They have to acclimate us to a level of potential and vibration and awareness so that we can say okay to it, because much of what they're teaching is stuff that I would have believed was completely impossible unless I'd begun to experience it. So the final series, as they call it, the Manifestation Trilogy, is really all about how this is put into practice in the physical realm and how physical reality is transformed through an alignment to a higher consciousness. So they build.
Well, this one is fantastic. I just finished it, and it was challenging. And I noticed throughout the book, you were asking for clarification a number of times. Did you find when you were channeling this information that for one reason or another, that more often than not, that than the other books that you were saying, well, what about this? What about that? What does that mean?
You know, I interrupt when I have a question. I'm not doing it because I think it's fun to interrupt. When they say something that is challenging to me at a level that I need more understanding, they will now usually say, Paul is interrupting. And often as not, they'll take the question. Sometimes they'll say, Paul is interrupting, we'll address it later. But mostly they do unpack my question. And I've been told that it's helpful to the reader when I
Yes.
do that. But as I'm in an odd position. I have my name on the cover of 12 books now that I didn't write. And people like to confuse me as the author, and I'm not. So I'll do interviews and say, well, in your last book, you said, and I say, well, no, I didn't actually. I was present for the last book. I consider myself a collaborator at a certain level because it's coming through me. But if I have a question, I don't want anything to be put out there that's going to be too confusing or potentially damaging. If I don't understand it, somebody else may not. I want to get clarity. So when they, I used to say, if they were to say, the moon is made of green cheese, somebody else who's channeling might just keep going, and I'm going, hey, wait a minute, what does that mean? And there, I don't know that they've contradicted themselves in the teachings. There was one, I think it might have been the Book of Mastery, where at the very early in the book they said something like, nothing is real. And I went, okay, well, I've heard that before, let them just keep going. And then the top of the next lecture they said, and everything is real. And I went, what? And I assumed it was a contradiction, and that meant because I don't get to go back and fix things or change things to make them diplomatic or politically correct or easy on the reader. I was like, oh my God, they just contradicted themselves. And in fact, they didn't. And it wasn't until I was doing a workshop at the Esalen Institute with a man named Jeffrey Kripal, who was, he still may be at the time, the head of the Religious Studies Department at Rice University, and he's a wonderful religious scholar. And I told him about this. He said, oh, yeah, that's what Meister Eckhart would talk about, because the guides had unpacked it. I mean, this world that we see is as real as it can be at this level of vibration and consciousness. But if you go to the higher, it becomes malleable to thought, and you can have a different experience entirely of what matter is. So anyway, those are the books, they just keep. They keep teaching, and fortunately, they keep progressing, because if they didn't, I think I'd get really bored,
Let's talk about this one then. A world made new. Obviously, the question that's begged is, what is a world made new, Paul?
If I understand what they're saying, a world made new is the product of a level of alignment when we have lifted our consciousness or vibration to a level of tone where we are not replicating the old because it's what we expect. The guides say that the personality self, sometimes they call it the small self, knows itself entirely through historical data. And they call it the common field, this world, this reality that we know. The common field has legacy and history. Things have been named and given moral credentials depending on how they were known throughout time. And so we're seeing in some ways the product of past thought all around us. If you walk out of your house, everything you see around you was named by somebody who came before you, and what these things mean have been sort of perpetuated and encoded through, ongoing usage. It's not that there's anything wrong with that. But if you lift to a level of consciousness beyond the common field, where all things are made new, which is a claim that they work with, behold, I make all things new, which is what the divine self or the God within perceives as a world beyond the historical data that we've utilized to, You go into a Kmart, you know what to go, you know what to expect in a Kmart. You go into a store without a name, you don't know what's there until you walk in. I mean, that's a simple example, and a new one. I actually like that one. I just made that one up myself. So, you know, when something is made new, it is re-seen. And the guides say that everything, high, low, and in between, is of source, because nothing can be without it. So God must be all things, or it can be nothing, but the things are operating at different levels of tone and vibration. So what we might call as, you know, evil or, you know, carnage or an atrocity would be low vibration, and something that we've elected to undergo or experience or chosen through a misalignment of will. And then there's higher vibration, which we might think of as love or unity consciousness and things like that, but they all exist in a spectrum of tone. And they say that that spectrum that we know of as our reality is an octave, as in a musical octave with its high and low notes. And the work that they say that they do with us is the work of transposition. They're transposing the music or the vibration that we are to be played in the next octave up, or in a higher octave. They say the difference with the higher octave and the lower octave is that the higher octave does not hold fear. That fear is a vibration, it's a low note. And that we've been operating in a field that's been so inured by fear for so long that we expect it to be there, and we think of it as our protectors and our companions. We keep building bigger and bigger bombs, and the belief that they're going to keep us safe, which is ridiculous, truthfully. If you think about bombs, eventually will go off, you know? So you move to the higher level of consciousness, and you're no longer replicating those ideas because you don't have the requirements of them. The kind of tribalism and factionalism and polarization we experience now is really, they say, a product of a belief in separation. We're separate from one another, we're separate from source. And you move to the higher and you begin to have another experience. And that's how a world is made new, because we are always in vibrational accord with what we see around us. So if you're operating at a level of tone where you're not reinforcing the old, the new is brought forth, the new is seen.
Now, in the what's called, they refer to as the upper room, there is no fear, no separation, but they do acknowledge in this book that, you know, if everything is divinity, then we are also, God loves its, loves the world through us, but also we are who we are. And a rock is a rock because we've called it a rock. It's divinity, but it's also a rock in physical 3D form. I know I'm not articulating it that well, but could you kind of unpack that for our audience?
I'll try to. I'm not sure about how you explained it, if I can work with that too well, but I'll see what I can do. So I'm Paul. I walk around. I have my experience as Paul. There is an aspect of me and of you and of everybody that the guides say is the divine spark or the divine self or the true self or the Christ itself. There's a lot of different names for it. The realization of that through us rearticulates us or reclaims us in a higher awareness of who we truly are beyond the ways that we decide. I can say I'm a man, I've been a male body, this is my age, this is what I do for a living, this is where I live. And while these things are true at a certain level, they are not who I truly am. There are ways that I'm experiencing myself. Now, a rock, you know, can be ground into dust and be called something else. You know, everything that we see, the tree outside my window was once a seed. You know, the piece of chicken on my plate was once squawking in a field. I mean, everything that we see has been known in other ways. The realization of form in a higher octave is not about pretending that the rock isn't a rock or that I'm not Paul and I'm not such and such an age, but it is also knowing these things as beyond that or beyond those significators to be expressions of source. When you begin to see the rock or the human being as an expression of source, how you perceive the other is altered, and the guides say the subject, the object, is also altered through the co-resonance that you are claiming it in. So the guides simply say God sees God in all of its creations. It's simple.
Okay. To be in the upper room, you need to be able to see the divinity in everybody, and you need to be able to drop your fear. Is that correct?
Well, I think maybe that's partially a product of, I mean, yeah, you can, you know, if I want to be frightened of somebody, and I can be, I get to go back downstairs and have that experience. Mm-hmm. But it's not about pretending that you're in a place where you're not. Everything that we encounter is an opportunity to re-know it. You know, if I'm getting triggered by something, clearly I have some work to do still. And that's okay. That's my work. It's not about arriving, here I am, resplendent me, with no worries and no neuroses and, you know, no pain. Mm-hmm. You know, then why bother? You know, that's the wrong idea of ascension. The idea that there's an aspect of you and me that is already realized, which they call the divine self, that's what abides in the upper room always. The rest of us is catching up to it. That's the difference. The God self or the divine self already knows itself at that level of tone. It already knows itself as of source and consequently knows everybody else as of source too, because it can't operate differently. The discrimination, the bigotry, all of those things are product of the small self, and that includes self-hatred and all those other things that we carry around that we get to work with.
They a couple of times in the book, they mention, like, it's like learning a new dance. At first, you're uncomfortable with the steps, or learning a new language, or learning how to sing a new song. Yeah. It seems that some people are concerned about, what am I going to lose by going to the upper room? And if I go up there, why can't I have everything right away?
Well, because that's adolescent aspiration.
Sure.
You know? I mean, yeah, I want God as long as God gives me what I want. You know, I want God as long as I get to live forever. I mean, I can't tell you how many people that I've talked to have said, does this mean we get to walk through walls as if that's the point of this? It's kind of, but I understand people like the exoticism or the sexiness of psychic stuff. But this is metaphysics, I think, and it's really, it's a mystical teaching. It's not a teaching of getting more of what you think you should have. The guides say the true self knows, the small self thinks. You know, my personality self has a great big agenda for what he would like, I suppose. Mm-hmm. The funny thing is, the life that I'm living now is a life that's remarkable to me. It's not a life I would have thought I could have had. And I actually, it showed up when I was ready for it. I had to be willing to say yes to what was already there waiting for me. It's a nice thing that can happen when you're not trying to control the outcome. So is the upper room where we get to bring our vision boards and say, give it all to me now? No. I think the upper room is where you get to say, God knows what I need. Mm-hmm. You know, and I am known in source, and what I'm required to know will come to me as I can hold it. And, you know, the guides say it's about claiming your true inheritance. It's not about grabbing something that you don't think that you're allowed and hoping you can keep it. That would be a dreadful way of approaching this kind of stuff.
You know, I have found, Paul, that as I had kind of a knowing recently that said, don't ask for things from God. Ask for God to show you how to do things.
That's
and
good.
That's made a huge difference. It's also kept me going, but I don't know where that came from, but maybe it goes back to the attunements that the guides are giving us. Like, I'm not sure if our audience is aware, but when you read these books, there's a number of attunements that are in there. And over time, you know, you read 12 books or so, you're getting a lot of attunements that stay with you beyond your reading of the books. And so when you get to the 12th book, you're kind of at a more advanced level of attunements, if you will. It doesn't mean you're any better than anybody else, but it seems to have helped me over time, put me in a position to be able to witness and to be able to have things come to me like, oh, ask God to show me how to do something so I can do the work instead of giving me something.
I don't think there's anything wrong with asking for help. I don't think there's anything wrong with asking God. I mean, if I'm going to say, God, give me the most expensive car in the lot, why am I asking that? The guides have said there is nothing wrong with a house on the hill. Somebody gets to live there, but why do you want it? If you want to make your neighbors jealous, you're creating in fear. You know, that's, and then you get to, and they say the action of fear is to claim more fear. Every choice we make in fear gets us more of the same. And I believe that to be true. I think asking for guidance is great. I don't know what I'm doing half the time. You know, I do trust more that I will know when I need to, and that I'm not going to necessarily, when I try to figure everything out, I'm not my own best ally. You know, I can make myself very worried and very crazy, and I try not to do that the way that I used to. So I don't know. I think people learn in different ways. If I hadn't asked God to help me, you know, get out of the pain that I was in when I was 25, and that prayer was answered in some weird ways. I mean, I didn't get out of the pain right away. I had to walk through a whole lot of it to get out of it, but at least I was shown a way, which I hadn't been. And my job was to show up for that way and, you know, show up. And I've been showing up for that as best I know how for, you know, 37 years now since. So I don't know. I don't know that I'm answering your question. I think how you're praying for support is fine. And all praying really is communication. And I think if the communication is honest, and one of the things is, God, I don't know what to do anymore, help. I can't figure this one out. I can't solve this one. I don't know. I thought I knew. I don't know. Show me the way. When I was new into a spiritual life, my old therapist, Hurricane Harriet, who was terrific, was a tough old broad, and she shoved the Daily Word at me, which was the little Unity magazine.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
And I loved it. I thought it was great.
It is.
And I know, you know, and it was so corny. It was like the thing you'd see in like your grandmother's bathroom or something. Here's the little Daily Word with little flowers on the cover. But I kind of loved it because all of this stuff, I mean, I had platinum blonde hair. I was a ex-druggy drunk, you know. But there was this woman who wrote this little article. She used to write a lot of them, I guess. Mary Kupferle or something was her name. And one of her little articles said, it is safe to let go and let God. That blew my mind. How is that possibly safe? But it actually helped me enormously up there with, I'm willing to be willing to let go of this, even if I don't understand what I'm doing. I am willing to be willing. You know, all that simple stuff was highly useful at the beginning, and really still is. If I need it, it's there. They're tools in the kit. The attunements that the guides work with are energetic. They're spoken attunements. They seem to work with an energetic agreement. In other words, people say it and you can feel the shifts in the body, and they do it very often in their workshops. You've got 100 plus people doing them, and you can feel, people can feel the energy when they work in partners. Yes. And you can feel it in the room, and you can feel it expand beyond the building. It's remarkable to do and experience, but that is one of the ways they work. And they say that all of the attunements operate like keys on a piano. And when the keys are played in simultaneity, there is a chord that is played. And the chord that is played is what aligns us in the upper room, I suppose.
Now, some of the key terms that they use, sayings or affirmations in multiple books, God is, God is, God is, it will be so. Behold, I make all things new. I'm in the upper room. Mm-hmm. Could you just break that down for our audience, those who may not be familiar with the power of those words? How can we use them, Paul? How do we use them?
They come in sequence. So I am in the upper room. There's a series of claims. I know who I am in truth. I know what I am in truth. I know how I serve in truth. I am free. I am free. I am free. Those are the first claims. Now, the I am presence, or the divine self, is what's claiming I know who I am. It's the God within saying, this is who I am. I know who, identity, what manifestations serve, express. I know who I am, what I am, how I express. I am free, I am free, I am free means I am releasing myself from the limitation that the common field has held about what is allowed. Imagine there's a false ceiling that we've all been bumping our heads against. And this is like moving that ceiling aside so that we can go to the higher. The next claim is I am in the upper room. It's the divine self claiming itself there. I am the I am self experiencing itself in the upper room. And then I have come, I have come, I have come, which is its announcement of its presence. And they say that claim enacts the transformation of the reclamation of the aspects of ourselves that have been operating in the lower field. It's the alchemical act of reclamation of the divine within us reclaiming everything as of itself. Behold, I make all things new is the next claim, and that's what the divine self experiences and sees. God sees God in all of its creations, and you can do this. I mean, it's experiential stuff. It's not a bunch of words, and you know, if you haven't done it, I'm sure it just sounds ridiculous, but there's an experience attached to all of these things. I'm in the upper room. I have come. Behold, I make all things new. It will be so, I think, is the next one.
Yes.
And God is, God is, God is. So it will be so is the, if I can recall this, because they're better off describing this than I am, and I'm doing this from memory, but when they teach it correctly. It will be so, the confirmation of behold, I make all things new, it will be so, is the experience of seeing or experiencing God as all things. God is, God is, God is. They say there is one note sung in the entire universe. It's in manifestation as everything we see. The one note sung has been called God. In their most, their newest book, which they just finished, they're getting even beyond the idea of God into what simply is, which is a whole other story and conversation.
Okay, my special guest on Guys Guys Radio, author of I Am the Word and a dozen other books that are channeled through, Paul Selig, A World Made New. There's a couple of other affirmations, if you will, that come through in this book, A World Made New. All things are in God. My body is of God, and my body may know itself in a higher expression.
I have no memory of it.
Okay, how about this?
I mean, I'm sure it's exactly what it says. That sounds like what they teach.
Right.
So one of the challenges that we've all had is that we have been taught to believe that if there is a God, it's up in a cloud and we're stuck here in the mud. And the guides have said, well, God is the mud. And if you deny the body that you have taken or shown up with as an expression of God, you've also denied God in the manifest world in its entirety.
Mm-hmm.
So if God is not in your fingers, how can God be in the tree or the ocean or the sky? And that's what they're doing here. And they're bringing us inclusive of form. And they've always been inclusive of form into that field.
Let me offer one more, because it's at towards the also towards the end of the book. I am willing to see, I am willing to know and be known.
I'm willing to see, which is, I suppose it means exactly what they say, perceive. I'm willing to, what was the second one?
I'm willing to know and be known.
And be known. Well, that's really interesting, because the guides talk a lot about being known. And they say we're in such, we're trying to know, we're so busy trying to find God or know God that we don't realize that God already knows us and that we are known. And one of their claims is, I am known, I am known, I am known. Which is being received in that experience of knowing source and being known by source.
Okay. Throughout these the books, there's mention of potential collapse of everything that we have known. Is that, in your interpretation, Paul, the physical collapse of our system and the changing of continents and some of those things that people have said? Or is it more symbolic of things changing in terms of how if we go into the upper room when we exist at a higher vibration, higher, a different chord, if you will, that those things will kind of fall away and we can be renowned as who we truly are?
I suspect both are probably true. I mean, the guides are generally fairly practical. The Book of Truth was dictated shortly before a lot of things sort of came to the surface that had been hidden, and we had a whole, we had movements around that kind of thing. They've been fairly on target with how they predicted things, but they're not teaching fear. And there are people that like to dine out on the apocalyptic stuff. But the guide said in the very first book, which was I Am the Word, is that humanity is at a time of reckoning, and a reckoning is a facing of the self and all of one's creations. And that means everything that we've created in fear needs to be renown in a higher way. But those things have to be seen in order to be re-seen. You can't pretend it's not there. This is not spiritual bypassing and spraying perfume on what smells so bad and pretending it was always perfumed. It's not that. And that's one of the, I think, apt criticism at times of the New Age, which is it can be whitewashing stuff. I don't get that that's this teaching. But they've also said that, you know, everything that's been created in fear needs to be recreated or renown in a higher way, which means there's nothing wrong with a bank in principle. It's what the bank has become. Or there's nothing wrong with a church. It's what the religious institutions have become. You understand? And so they say, you know, if a building is held together by the cement of fear, the building may not last and may have to be rebuilt in a higher operating way.
Okay. Thank you so much, Paul. I'm wondering if the guides have any message for our audience today.
I'll see if I can do this. I'm on my first cup of coffee. Only one thing. Stop telling yourself you're not allowed. Stop telling yourself you're not allowed. Stop telling yourself you're not allowed to know God or have an experience of God or having have an experience of God or to trust God or to trust God or to see God or even to see God. Stop telling yourself no. Stop telling yourself no, it is already there. It is already there. It is open to you. It is opening to you as you open to it. As you open to it, you are more than welcome. You are more than welcome, period, period, period. And they're saying period, period, period.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. Just last question for you, a little add-on question. Has this taken a toll on you doing this work over the years, the last decade or so? Has it made, how's it changed you? And has it taken a toll?
Well, I mean, it has a physical component to it, which I have to recover from. I channel a lot. I think probably more than other people who do this kind of work do. And it works with my nervous system. But I'm healthier than I've been in years.
Good.
I am living a better life than I've lived in years. And I've had more peace than I've had in years. So the toll has been, you know, positive. It does mean, though, that I don't get to run away from my stuff. And that requires my being able to sit through periods of extended uncomfortability. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably true for anybody who's on a spiritual path. You know, it's not a magic wand. It's a journey.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Paul, for coming back, as always, to Guys Guys Radio. Appreciate your work. I met you way at the very beginning. I stumbled upon your book in the bookstore around the corner from your apartment at the time. And it's been a pleasure knowing you. And thank you for all the work you're doing.
Thank you for having me.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, another fascinating conversation with Paul Selig. Paul is the author, quote unquote, because he doesn't consider himself the author of, I think it's 13 books now. We discussed A World Made New, Book 3 of the Manifestation Trilogy, and it says a channeled text. And according to Paul, he doesn't write these books, they come through him from his guides, where he verbally expresses the text, and then it's transcribed. It's interesting because in some of his live streams and some of his workshops, copy for the book comes through during those sessions, so you hear it live, and then when it's all compiled over the course of about a year, a new book is put together, a new book comes out, and it's very, you know, the editing is limited to maybe punctuation here or there, but it's pretty much the books come right through, and they're chunky books too. This book is about 275 pages long, and there's a lot of words on the page, and there's a lot to process. And after finishing the book, I asked myself, okay, what did I get out of this book that was different from the other books? And there is some new ways of looking at things in terms of how do I maintain a vibration to keep myself above fear, above separation, above damning my fellow man, above judgment? And just the reminder of that is a really good thing. So specifically, I can't say I learned A, B, and C from reading one of these books, but that takes about a month, for me at least, to read one of these books, because you're not supposed to just plow through the whole thing. You read sections and it says stop here. And I'm pretty decent with that, but I need to finish the book, so sometimes I'll go two sections instead of one. But there's a lot to process, and there's a lot of things where the guides ask you, if you say yes to this, we'll attune you. And I think the attunements aggregate over time and keep building within us. So that's a really good thing, because As a Reiki master teacher, I know that I can still get attunements on Reiki, and it's a good thing. It's not like you get your attunement and that's it. You can continue to get attunements, which continues to refine and heighten your frequency and your vibration. It's a really good thing. And I think that's one of the things, the good things that happens with these books. The texts, to me, are charged, and you get a lot out of reading the book. And the guides remind you of this as you're reading. Listen, folks, it's not a sell job. This is, if you take the time and get into these books, it will help you see things differently, witness life differently, experience life differently, be less judgmental, less about separation, less impacted by fear. And I think you can help yourself get into a really good space by reading these books. The first one is called I Am the Word. I read that about a dozen years ago, and I stumbled upon it at a bookstore. And little did I know that Paul Selig had his studio around the corner. And I ended up signing up for a session, a reading with the guys, which was amazing. And then I went through a few workshops, my wife and I, with Paul and the guides, and they were also incredible. And you can feel the vibrations while you're in these workshops. And now Paul goes all around the world. He's got live streams. There's thousands of people who are continuing to get the teachings of the guides and hopefully put it into practice. And as Paul mentioned, you can read any of the books whenever you want, but I've read them in order, and one a year is plenty for me because they're chock full of vibrations, chock full of frequency, and chock full of good things I feel. It's good for my soul, good for me, good for my vibration. So great stuff with Paul Selig. Okay, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Guys Radio on UK Health Radio. We're back next week with another great show. And until then, like I always say, guys, finish first.